Have you ever wondered what you would get if you crossed a school teacher with a vampire hunter? You would get a character that almost always has a plan, rarely curses, but is willing to rip your heart out. The fantasy novel Blood Magic by R.L. Collins has been released on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Welcome to Blood Magic, the podcast. Selena Anderson is a small-town teacher with a big-time problem with vampires who are out to kill her before she can make them her next meal. She is looking forward to a quiet, lazy summer in Culpeper, Virginia. At least this is her plan before three strangers enter her life in one day. Welcome to podcast episode 18. Selena discovers other magical creatures in Virginia. I drove about 10 miles until I found the McDonald's. I changed my clothes in the car. I found a couple of dollars in the glove department and went through the drive-thru to get a chicken sandwich meal. While the attendant was counting my change, I found out I was in Burton County. I was 25 miles from the Blue Ridge Mountains. I had a long drive ahead of me to get back to Richmond. I quickly finished my meal and got back onto the two-lane country road. I had to head for the main interstate. It was a quiet ride. There was nothing on the radio. Occasionally, cars passed me going in the opposite direction. The road curved and ambled up and down as I wound my way through the rockiness of the mountains. The half moon was nestled between two peaks of the Blue Ridge Mountains. The only other light was from my headlights. A black bear sat in the middle of the road. I swerved to avoid hitting it and ran the car right into a ditch. I looked into the rearview mirror and saw the animal turn around and amble towards the car. I tried to pull out of the ditch, but the dirt was too soft. The wheels just spun. Then I heard a roaring from the woods next to the ditch. I turned to see two more bears making their way towards me. One actually stood up on its hind legs. Its jaws yawned wide open with yellow teeth. I tried to remember my camping survival 101 about bear safety. All I could remember was that you are supposed to store the food in airtight containers to avoid attracting bears. Also, if confronted by a bear, supposed to drop to the ground, curl into the fetal position, and protect your head. I settled for slumping down in the seat, trying to make myself invisible. I slid down until all I could see was the control panel of the car. I waited. There was a knocking on the glass on the driver's side of the car. I slowly slid up and came face to face with a woman. She had fair skin, long blue-black hair, and brown eyes. I quickly rolled down the window. "There are bears," I said in a rush, "three of them." She smiled at me, then said, "I know, Selena. I'm one of those bears." It was deja vu. I realized there must be an animal kingdom of were-animals. I looked behind her to see two shirtless men apparently waiting for me. They both had the blue-black hair and fair skin. One had gray eyes, while the other had dark brown, almost black eyes. "I'm Catherine," the woman continued. "The two behind me are Ian and Sam. Ian is the taller of the two. Sam has the torn jeans." "Okay," I said, confused. "Why did you run me off the road?" "Well, that was a way of greeting you and getting your attention. We need you to come with us. We need your help." "Does it involve vampires?" I asked. "Yes, it does," Catherine said with a sad tone. Now that I understood, I unlocked the door and got out, stretching my cramped body. The three bears led me into the woods down a dirt path. A few yards in, I saw three beautiful horses. Two were a chestnut brown, and the third was snow white. The werebears mounted the horses with the ease of many years of experience. Catherine reached down to help me fit into the saddle behind her on the white horse. Then she spurred her horse into a gallop. We covered a few miles in a matter of minutes. The horses slowed their pace as we came through a clearing in the woods. Up ahead was a large ranch-style house. Next to it was a barn, and the land itself was a fenced-in pasture. We dismounted, then the three werebears led their horses through a gate into the pasture. Inside the house, we walked through a short foyer into a living room. It had a nature theme with a color scheme of shades of green and brown and cream. I sat down on a couch. Sam stepped in front of Catherine, blocking her path. "I don't agree with this. We don't need an outsider's help." "Sam, it's not your call. We must decide as a clan." Catherine turned away from Sam and called out, "Madison, we're home." The woman in question came out of the kitchen. Madison was very petite. She had the same coloring as the others, blue-black hair, but her eyes were a vivid blue. She was wearing jeans and a t-shirt behind a floral apron. "Ah, so you found her," she said in a surprisingly husky voice. Then she turned to the two men. "We are civilized in this house. Go put on your shirts, you two," she said more sternly. They diligently disappeared down a black hallway. Another man came out of the kitchen. He immediately narrowed his black eyes on me. "Why is she here?" "Now, Joe," Madison said as she laid a hand on his shoulder. "You knew we were expecting her arrival at any moment. Today is our lucky day." Catherine laughed at that, releasing some of the tension in the room. "It is our lucky day indeed. She didn't try to shoot us like some hungry hunter." Sam and Ian returned. Sam was clad in a simple blue t-shirt and jeans. Ian chose a plaid camp shirt to go with his khakis. Madison, who must have been the clan's matriarch, clapped her hands together for everyone's attention. "Now that we're all here, let's proceed." The werebears spread themselves out around the room. Some grabbed chairs or relaxed in recliners. Others kicked back on the sofa along with me. Madison sat in a rocking chair directly in front of me. "Who exactly are you?" I couldn't resist asking. "We're the werebear clan of the Montes. More conveniently, we're also known as the Bears of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Why do you need my help?" "Vampires and unsavory humans have banded together to wreak havoc on the peace that has existed between humans and more magical creatures. Vampires usually see humans as food, but now they're also trying to find a way to control magical creatures. They've stolen our cubs, our children. They hold them in a facility farther into the mountains. We know they are still alive, but we don't know for how much longer. We heard of your arrival as the one in this war. We're hoping you'll help us get our children back." Madison has said a lot for me to digest. There seemed to be a lot that was unknown. "Do you know exactly where the facility is or what's inside?" "We know where it is. We have an idea of how to get inside, but we don't know exactly what we'll find once we make it through the guards." I thought for a second longer. Children were involved. I couldn't resist. "I'll do it." "No, this is a bare matter. We need to handle this on our own," Sam seethed. "I think she's part of the problem. The vampires didn't rise in power until she showed up." Joe joined in, adding tension to the room. Catherine lost her patience as well. "She is the answer. We haven't been able to get them back on our own. We must turn to others who are willing to help." Ian slid his arm around Catherine's shoulders. "Don't you want the cubs back? What if this is the only way?" Madison put up her hand, silencing them all. "We'll take this to a vote. Those in favor of Selena helping us, raise your hand." Madison kept her hand up. Catherine and Ian joined us. "Now those in favor of her not helping us, raise your hand." Sam and Joe raised their hands. It was already decided they were outnumbered. "It has been decided. She comes with us. There will be no more arguing on the matter. We all need to work together for the sake of the children." Chapter 11. The team, Selena and the werebears, have made their way to Fisherman's Pub to begin their mission to retrieve the children. Fisherman's Pub is a popular local dive, according to Bob. It's in the heart of downtown Roanoke. The pub was nestled in a shopping plaza of several shopping stores, a drugstore, and a small bookstore. Its sign boasted the best neighborhood seafood, and it had a large lobster on its roof as if to prove a point. Inside was rustic. The theme was indeed fishermen and the wharf. Local fishermen had submitted pictures of their prize catches, and these photos were like wallpaper for the restaurant. A plump, dark-haired hostess seated us in a booth along an aisle of booths next to the dance floor. On the other side of the dance floor was the bar. Our waitress was Lisa, a young Hispanic teenager probably working her first job. She brought us a round of drinks while we tried to decide on the menu. I settled on lemon glazed salmon. The rest settled on other fish meals. However, Madison decided to try the lobster, as the gigantic sign outside encouraged her to do. After our meals arrived, we made idle chit-chat as we ate, trying to scan the restaurant. We were looking for anyone that matched the description we received of Antonio, the drug dealer. As time waned, the restaurant began to fill up. Well-fed and buzzed patrons made their way out onto the dance floor. The old jukebox at the back of the dance floor played oldies. Some changed their selection to the electric slide, and the dance floor was suddenly crowded as people organized themselves for the infamous line dance. Men, women spun, kicked, and shuffled their way along to the music. Following that song, one of the hostesses brought out a karaoke machine. I listened to a corny rendition of Beat It and a shrill Wishing Upon a Star. The third song was the most comical of all. A man sang, "You Give Me Fever," while trying to dance suggestively. People wandered off and on the dance floor, depending on their preference of music. The crowd thinned in between a song, and that's when I saw him at the bar. I saw a hulking, dark-haired man in jeans, a white t-shirt, and a black leather vest. I saw a flash of red, like a halo, around his body, and I knew he was a vampire. "Did you see that?" I asked Catherine next to me. "See what?" she asked. "That man at the bar flashed red. I think he's a vampire. I think he's a vampire we're looking for," I said, jutting my chin in his direction. "You are unblocked, my dear. That's how magical creatures recognize each other. It's like a flash of intuition, a light, a whispered voice, anything. Now the question is he the vampire we need?" Madison said. We watched him for a little while longer. Eventually, a woman approached him. She wore barely their clothing, a short jean skirt, and a top tank with spaghetti straps. Her hair was teased into a rat's nest. She slid up to the vampire, tossed her hair, and ordered a drink. They spoke long enough for her to drain her drink. She put her hand on his beefy forearm, whispered into his ear. The vampire gave a tight-lipped smile, then he inclined his head toward the exit. They got up and left the bar together. He lumbered towards the exit while she teetered on two high heels. We gave them a few minutes' head start, then we threw our money down on the table and followed them out. Night had fully fallen. The only night was the street lights. I caught the clicking of heels and we walked east along the front of Fisherman's Pub to the alley. We slipped in behind a dumpster and watched the woman with the vampire. She was chattering incessantly about nothing and reached into her faux crocodile purse. She counted out several $20 bills and handed it to the vampire, who had to be Antonio. Antonio reached into his leather vest and pulled out a bag of white pills. The woman greedily snatched them in her claws and stuffed them into a purse. A rat scuttled over her feet and she squealed in terror. She turned on her heels and teetered out of the alley. We ducked behind the dumpster until she passed us. Madison slipped out after her to try to convince her not to take the tainted drugs. "You can come out now. I know you're there," Antonio said smoothly. We stepped out from behind the dumpster and faced him like it was the OK Corral. He stood in the middle of the alley with his hands hanging loosely at his sides and an annoying smirk on his face. "We want the bad drugs you're selling," Tina demanded. "We want your supplier as well," I added. Antonio's face faltered and he took a step backwards. "You," he breathed as he stared into my eyes. He decided to turn tail and try and run. He ran towards the back of the alley and leaped into a hanging fire escape ladder. Tina and Bob chanted a spell together that made the vampire sluggish and weak. He dropped down from the ladder. We had him cornered. He was trying to fight through the haze of the spell. He turned and tried to throw a punch at me, but I was quicker. I snapped his head back with the force of my blow and broke his nose. His blood smeared across my knuckles and began to trickle down his face. I had what I needed. I ran my tongue across the scarlet stain. I was instantly in his mind. His hulking figure stood ramrod straight with tension. "Antonio, tell me, who is your supplier?" I demanded. He was an old vampire, and he was trying to fight my compulsion. He snapped his jaw shut and was grinding his teeth. I slid further into his mind, clicking into place, allowing me to push through his resistance. "Valentino," he gasped. "He gives me the drugs. Where is this Valentino?" "He's in Dermont. He owns the nightclub called Hawk," he stammered. "Address, please." 4190 Sawyer Lane. "Thank you," I said sweetly as I reached into his vest and snatched the assorted collection of drugs. Antonio mumbled something under his breath. "What was that?" I asked. "You're a demon. You feed off the undead," he seethed. Without more blood, I was losing him, but I wasn't interested in taking any more of his blood, at least not that way. Antonio lashed out and grabbed Bob by the throat. I pulled the hunting knife I had stashed in the waistband of my jeans and cut off his hand at the wrist, freeing Bob. Then I slashed at Antonio's throat, severing his head. It dropped to the ground like the filthy garbage that was in abundance. His body fell to its knees. I proceeded to slit his sternum and tear out his heart. Antonio was done. I wiped his blood off on his clothes, and he began to disintegrate into ash. "I know the town of Dermont," Bob said, massaging his bruised throat. "That's good news. We need to regroup and head to this Hawk nightclub and see Valentino," I said. We left the alley with its festering trash and went back to the car. Madison caught up to us. She revealed that she had to buy the drugs off the woman to keep her from taking them. We got into Bob's car and left Fisherman's Pub. At Bob's home, we parked and he led us up to the front door. I crossed the threshold and there in the living room was some of the brothers spread out around his living room. Devlin, Sajou, John and Gerald had made the journey down from Richmond. Devlin ran to me first and he picked me up and spun me around until I was breathless. Sajou was next, giving me a fierce bear hug. John and Gerald gave me brotherly embraces and checked me over from head to toe. Tomlin had given them the brief story of my ordeal since leaving the hospital, but the men wanted the details from me. Madison and the others went upstairs. I didn't leave anything out and ended with the meeting with Antonio in the alley. So the vampire that killed Missy was from the Mooresville Nest, Devlin said. I'm almost positive that's where I recognized him from. How did he know where you were? Sajou jumped in. He said he felt me. He felt that I was in danger. Perhaps the showing at the Mooresville Nest work. This particular vampire is no longer a puppet to Marcus. This is good news, John thought aloud. I wish there was a way of seeing if there were others, I mused. If we had a few vampires loyal to you in Marcus's circle, we would be able to pinpoint his location and activities, Devlin said. We would have a fountain of information. It would almost give us an edge. We would have a fountain of information, I said. It would give us an edge so long as it remained a secret. We need more time to explore this, said Sajou. Tonight, we need to get to Valentino and Dermont. Bob knows the way, I said. With that, we made our plans for taking on the vampire. It was decided that Tina, Bob, Ian, and Catherine would come with the brothers and me. The rest of the werebears would keep the children safe. Thank you for listening. We want to make one correction to this week's podcast. Bob and Tina are witches who are friends with the werebears in the Blue Ridge Mountains. They will be part of the journey from here on out. Tune in same time, same place next week for more of the tale of blood magic.